You are listening to a recording of the chat between Bas van den Belt from Stata Digital and Dixon Jones and Mel Carson from Majestic, a brand that is most known in the search industry, formerly known as Majestic SEO. Majestic now is an example of how a brand that understood the value of data in a very early stage knows how to pivot and stay the same at the same time. In this chat, we talk about all the changes they've gone through and what they are looking for in the future. You can find videos of the chat on stateofdigital.com as well as descriptions of what is being said. If you want to go there, go to stateofdigital.com/learningmajestic. Hi there. So, interestingly enough, Majestic, formerly known Majestic SEO, now Majestic, turns 12 this year. It's the largest commercial link intelligence database in the world. It crawls the web and it views around a billion URLs a day. That's what the website says. They analyze data. It's like the tool that everybody uses in SEO. The last few months, however, Majestic came in the news a lot with branding stuff that was not directly related to SEO, but they're in the news a lot. So that showed me we need to talk to those guys. We need to understand what they're doing. Because in the last few months, a lot of news was there. Like, they won a Queen's Award in innovation. They now have a Twitter account called at Majestic instead of @TryMajestic, and they're going into space. So it's about time we caught up with Majestic, and we're doing that with two people who are well-known faces in the search industry, who are very knowledgeable on the topic of both branding and SEO, and they can tell us all about what Majestic is doing at this point and of time. And those two people, of course, are Dixon Jones and Mel Carson. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
So let's start off with the Queen's Award, Dixon. It was a news that came out like a week or a week and a half ago that you won the Queen's Award. Now, you've won several awards in your life. What's so special about this one?
Well, okay, so the Queen's Award came out on the Queen's 90th birthday last Thursday, so it's a very significant date, obviously, that it came out. And the Queen's Award, obviously, we're a British company, and you know, we're mostly proud of our heritage and our Queen, and we have this unique ability in the UK to have, you know, the Queen giving awards to businesses, just like she does to, you know, OBEs and MBEs to individuals, and you know, it's a really prestigious award. To be able to get that is a sign that the business is doing well, and I don't think that it's just the business that's doing well. I think the award is good for the SEO industry as a whole, because I think search marketing gets a pretty bad time of it, usually due to spammers, and a lot of it well deserved, but it doesn't often get the recognition outside of our smaller world. And so if anything else, I think it's good for the whole industry to be able to say, yeah, this is a recognition that transcends beyond search, beyond SEO, and really is a statement to internet marketing, to business everywhere, that, you know, there's some real innovation in here, because that's what our award was for, innovation.
So you won the award for innovative. So you're innovative. That's what it said, right? You're different, and we know how you can be innovative inside the SEO industry. For people outside of the SEO industry, maybe everything that has to do with what we're doing is innovative.
Yeah.
So why does this, what's innovative for them on this?
I think there are a few things that came out, but the one that the judges came back which stood out for me was our innovation in the way in which we collect data and crawl the internet using distributed crawlers. So Google has a huge data center, and has to crawl all from one location and store that location, and that's an expensive process, as Moz will tell you, as they found that, you know, trying to do that on Amazon Cloud is a very expensive process. And our partnership with crawlers around the world, we were one of the very first crowdsource projects out there. 12 years ago, we had this idea of saying, hey, if computers, home computers can be used to break the Human Genome Project or to do the SETI program, you know, why not use the bandwidth, the spare bandwidth on computers, machines to try and crawl the web? And we became, you know, one of the biggest crawlers on the web without having to have that huge data center that that Google's got. And that innovation in itself, I think, is really, really, really interesting to have been able to do that. And that's the one that stood out. So that gives us an edge. It gives us a different way of looking at the internet, even than Google, who has to look at it from one location.
Yeah.
So that's probably one that stood out. But there's several things along the way that I think has made Majestic's the Majestic business innovative along the way. That's a pretty good one.
Just on the Queen's Award, that I got involved 3.5 years ago with Majestic as their US brand ambassador, simply because I could see the great work that Dixon and the team were doing, not just innovating within the industry, but almost kind of having a kind of higher purpose to try and get not just SEOs, but digital marketers, you know, that's why we kind of dropped the SEO, because we wanted to broaden the audience, to really understand the power of data, linked data, and the power of computing to help people make better decisions about where they spend their marketing budgets. So for a cynic to look at the Queen's Award, you could see, oh, you know, they just applied for that so they get an award. But I'd like to think that there's a kind of higher purpose there, in that we can use it now to open doors with journalists and press and influencers who traditionally have gone, but you're an SEO and I don't really understand SEO and I've heard bad things about it. We can actually use this now that if it's been endorsed, you know, by the Queen and the UK government, we can start opening doors and really start broadening the audience and putting a much more positive spin on what not just Majestic are trying to do out there, but also quash some of the negativity that there might be out there initially from consumers, but also business people that don't understand digital, to really, you know, capitalize and understand the power of it and why it's the future and why they need to wake up and start listening.
Yeah, you're actually answering the question I was going to ask, so that was great.
I knew that.
We're light years ahead.
So you're saying negativity. Could you mean cynicism maybe more than negativity? As in people are negative about SEO, maybe more cynical about SEO than negative?
Yeah, you can use either. I think there's a combination of certainly scoundrels on the internet. Let's not argue. You know, there are scoundrels on the internet, and they've traditionally, you know, selling. SEO, they've been selling snake oil, a lot of people. But there's also a huge amount of innovation, a huge amount of technology, and a huge amount of thought that's gone into this industry, the internet marketing industry, to try and stop the whole thing being railroaded by one company or two companies or governments or whatever it may be. And in order to do that, you've got to understand what's happening on the internet, and to do that, you first got to see the whole internet, and that's a really hard thing to do. So if we can just do that bit and just give everyone the map, it's not just about backlinks of the Google algorithm. It's much more about what that fabric of the internet means to businesses in particular, and society in general, and how those connections make up a very real mirror of real life in many, many ways.
If you look at your website, let me quote what it says. I'm not sure it still says, but your website says, insights on link building, website traffic, competitor analysis, and news monitoring. With Majestic, you can understand the link profile of your own website as well as your competitors. That sounds very much SEO, right?
Yeah.
how to translate that from how we in the SEO industry, because I think, let me explain why I'm asking the question also. I think many SEOs are struggling with the same things that you are or have been thinking about for the last couple of, years. That is, what's the position of SEO and how do we make it broader than just being that little corner of the entire digital marketing process? And I think you guys are doing that, but the question is, how can you translate that from being the link building, website traffic, SEO kind of brand to, okay, we're doing much more than that and we can help you even if you don't know even what the term SEO means?
Wow. So I'm sure Mel will want to jump on this before I finish, but I'll just come in first because I can. I think other people in the industry are going to have to understand their own position and their own marketing position. But I'll tell you a little bit about ours. I mean, if you take a proper theoretical approach to marketing, then you usually start with a PESL, understanding the politics of the industry you're in, the environment that you're in, you know, the sociological factors, how people are affected, the technology factors, which of course are huge in our industry, and then ecology factors, you know, are we getting rid of paper or are we using lots more batteries and power to power all these computers, you know? So those kinds of environmental factors start with any marketing plan, and then understanding that landscape is the first thing that you should do before you even do a SWOT analysis or understand where you fit in that business model. But you then come down to you know, the next layer, which is your competition and the companies in there. And obviously we're positioned as a company that's well known within the SEO industry, but not within the others. It doesn't mean to say that we haven't got a technology that wouldn't go into other places. I mean, we've got one of the biggest web crawlers on the planet, so why haven't we got a search engine? Good question. I'll tell you why, because Google's a bloody good search engine. So, you know, until I've got a better reason, then I'm not going to go and compete with Google. So every business then needs to find what Michael Porter would call blue ocean areas. So areas in which your business doesn't have huge amounts of competition. So there's no point in me trying to build a technology that is going to try and do all the things that, say, Linkdex does, you know, or other technology companies that are trying to build SEO tools based in part on the best technologies out there and bringing in bits and pieces to have a customer base who's an enterprise customer that can use one base to try and see different parts of the puzzle. If I go into that model, then I lose my focus on the bit that we're good at, which is the links. No one else is doing the links, or very few people are doing the links. And even within the link game, there's different patterns. You know, Moz has a very different set of products. They've got a broader set of product suite. They've got a less focus on links than us and more focus on community than us, for example. Our sweet spot is that map of how all the web pages link to each other. So we started out by saying that we're custodians of the data. And I don't think that's gone away. We are still custodians of the data. And if we stay there, that's great. So on the website, yes, you see an audience that's SEOs. But if you talk to another part of our business model and you want our technology, our link API, and you want to put that into other technologies, you would see a completely different side of Majestic. And then if you actually go to majesticanalytics.com, you're going to start seeing some ideas of where we're going with the data now, because if we've got one of the biggest indexes in the world, then why are we giving you links? Why aren't we giving you all the websites that are about automobiles, for example, and how influential those are? So we can start slicing and dicing the data. So getting the data is important first and foremost, but then learning to slice and dice it for specific segments, I think, is our right approach. So that allows us to, by focusing, that allows us to be lower cost than any other proper link tool out there. So the link technology out there, we've got the biggest, we've got the most insightful, and yet we're the lowest cost of entry. So that's what you do when you get focus. You don't try and be all things to all people. That doesn't mean to say we haven't got grand ambitions. We have got grand ambitions, and then moving out of links, we kind of want to move into what those links talk about people, and maybe Mel can come in on how we're using that notion to start addressing the PR industry, for example.
Mel?
Yeah, I mean, with the whole idea of broadening the audience, I mean, when I got taken on, I was pretty surprised when Dixon reached out to me, because I'm not an SEO, I'm not a technical guy when it comes to that kind of stuff. I came from a PPC background. But he said, no, you're exactly the kind of person we need to help increase our halo effect beyond just the SEO community, because, you know, we're very well known in the SEO community. People are either using us, or they're using somebody else, or they're using us and somebody else. So, you know, how can we, because we know that this data is going to be useful to other people outside the SEO industry. So when I started looking at it from, you know, digital PR perspective, and was getting into influencer marketing, which, you know, my company does on a day-to-day basis, I suddenly started realizing the genius of it. And I think the way that Dixon and Alex have embraced, you know, their ambassador program of people going out there around the world talking about it, but talking about it beyond SEO and trying to edge people and educate people. And I'll admit, it's been a slow burn process. You know, it took a couple of years to drop the SEO from the brand. What's been interesting is I've been trying to talk to PR tools, a lot of the tool providers. So what Dixon was talking about, being the custodian of the data, I've been going to a lot of the tool providers and saying, you know, if you put this in here, then you can do this, that, and the other. And to be honest, a lot of them have been quite scared, because it then makes their data really accountable, which might seem odd, but I'm not sure that the agencies and the clients were necessarily ready for that. So in the last 6 months, I've actually been going into PR agencies. So I've totally swapped it over. Instead of going to the tool providers, I've gone to the PR agencies and said, look, you can find out how many links came to this press release. You can find out how many links came to that New York Times article that your client was actually mentioned in, and you can actually see how that spread out across the web and all this kind of stuff. And because they're suddenly waking up to this, oh, I got to use this thing called big data thing, they're all starting to use it. So they're starting to sign up to Majestic as a tool to augment their already, you know, quite basic reporting of mentions, impressions, and engagements that a lot of the press release news distribution services have. So, not to give away our complete strategy, but, you know, we're trying to get them to then put pressure on the tool providers to say, look, can you shove this stuff in here, because this is, you know, this is the future, and I want to see the knock-on effect. And as more and more companies become more integrated, I was just at PBC Hero, the Hero Conf, and Marty is suddenly, you know, Marty Weintraub is now starting to talk about digital PR, which is fantastic. As more and more of these teams start becoming more integrated, and the digital marketing agencies start doing more digital PR and chasing at the heels of those more traditional PR companies, then this kind of data is going to be hugely important to, as I've said, augment that reporting and actually make those PR companies more accountable, instead of saying to the CMO of said company, we got you a mention in Forbes and 50 million people read Forbes every month, which, yeah, as we know, is total BS, because, you know, you just have to look at that Forbes article to see that it's only had 300 views and realize it was a waste of time.
Yeah. Would you say that you are educating those people? Are you showing them what they haven't seen before? Or are you creating a whole new world for them?
We're showing them stuff that they might have heard of, because somebody, and as you said, in the corner of their office does SEO and talks about links a lot. But we are educating. I mean, we started a series of interviews that I did at SMX West with Dwayne Forrester. We've got Sherry Thoreau coming up, and for us, about how to use link data more creatively for influencer marketing and PR and content marketing and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's an education piece. I think some people within their companies might see it as a whole new world, but you know, the three of us have been at this for 15, 20 years and it's like, this isn't new, but
no, but what I think is new or newer is that most of the tools until the big crawlers came along like Majestic, most of the tools were relying on some slightly ropey stuff. A lot of it was relying on Yahoo's Site Explorer, for example, which was just it was scraping and lots of tools doing that. Google, of course, got completely tripped up by relying on the Twitter API, and it suddenly got pulled by Twitter. They seem to have sorted themselves out now and made a bit more of a relationship, which I imagine has been looked at by an awful lot of lawyers, so it doesn't happen again. But it's taken a while for our industry to gather any concept of technologies that can do the tracking, the combining, the analyzing for us all to get some reasonable insights that aren't just whatever bit of information is given out to us by having a little green PageRank toolbar or whatever bits and pieces that are out there that are third party driven. So having our own data is really, really important. And I think going back to Mel's point of the middleman not wanting to be accountable, some of the big agencies I think have been guilty of not looking at what's inevitable. And Google has come up from a technology side and Bing and forced the hands of those agencies in the middle that were holding very large budgets and saying, here's 20 million quid for, you know, ABC PLC, spend that over the course of the year and choose your advertising and your televisions. And they owned the suppliers because they had the control with the television companies and those big advertising mediums. They then had control over the buyer. The buyer didn't have a huge amount of control because the buyer couldn't just go to the television companies and get the TV ads there. And what Google has done has been, as Sir Martin Sorrell would say, has been a frenemy. So what they've done is they've given the end customer, the advertiser, the ability to go direct to the advertising medium, and they've broken it down into easy manageable chunks. Now, so much so that a large organization probably doesn't want to handle £50 here, $20 there, you know, €3 in the back room on a keyword that they've never really understood. So they still would like those people in the middle, those technologies in the middle, but those technologies in the middle now clearly don't have the same influence in the market unless they can be accountable, because the end product is showing accountability. So I think there is this real move. So if the organizations, the big agencies in the middle, continue to not provide real analytics and real insight to their end customers, then their own customers will ultimately drop them along the way. So that's the danger. And then the challenge for them then is there's a real opportunity as well, because these big companies don't want to handle all these segmented channels that didn't exist before.
You can safely say, I guess, that you guys actually benefited from all the Google updates.
It depends what's happening in the update, yeah.
Well, at least for the realization of people that, oh, wait a minute, it's not just something we can throw through our agency. We need to be serious about this. And that probably helped Majestic a lot.
Whenever there's an update, there's always a little bit of chaos whilst people panic about what's caused the update, what's happening. But the thing is that there's so many updates that it's hard to say who's panicking today and who's not. Yeah. So we do on some days see spikes in the sign-up rate, for sure. And if it's a really big update, you can guarantee everyone's going to be coming back and checking out everything that's there for sure. And that can move the needle. I think the danger for us and where we really want to make sure we don't find ourselves ending up is a cul-de-sac that says all we do is try and produce a product that is trying to emulate what Google might be doing. That to me isn't wholesome. It's not what we set out to do. We set out to build a search engine. We haven't got there yet because we haven't found a business model that's going to work better than Google's. But along the way, we found some very rich seams of data and information, and we found a number of new places that we can take that. Yeah. But we can only take it if we take our brand to the next level.
Yeah. You don't want to be the fix. You want to be in front of what's happening.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, and a lot of the technologies there have search visibility metrics. You know, yeah. We're never going to do that again because we'd start stepping on our big technology customers. Yeah. But also because it's somebody else's search. I want us to be able to demonstrate our own reason as to why this Twitter profile is more influential than this Twitter profile. I don't want to take it from Twitter. I don't want to take it from Google. I don't want to take it from how many times they get seen in the search engine results. I want to take it from our own data source, and it goes back to being custodians of the data.
Okay. I want to get back a little bit about the branding of Majestic. Maybe you've read the book, if you heard of Simon Sinek with the why. So start with the why. Mm-hmm. What is the why of Majestic?
Because we can.
Because you can. Okay.
Because Alex can. So that was the original why. A little bit of a story about Alex is that he was born in the steppes of Siberia. You know, he's nobody knows who he is, but you know, you've seen him. You're one of the few. You know, I had to drag him out to Europe once, and he came to the UK and he worked hard to get his degree, start working for Jungle, which is an early version of Amazon, and he really learned his big data stuff. But the day that he became a British citizen is the day he gave up his job. He left his job. He put himself in a room for about 5 years, I'd say, and just typed 500,000 lines of code because he could, because he had a dream. And his dream was the idea of a distributed search engine should be more efficient and more more honest, more of the people than one that's centrally controlled and run by a large organization. And so he set about that idea, and he had the distributed search engine idea. And it hit some technological hurdles along the way, but you know what? We've got through a hell of a lot of them so far, and we've got through a hell of a lot of them not by getting billions from Silicon Valley. We've got through by building up a business model that is done the British way. And the British way is, If you one day sell £2 of data, try and make 20 pence worth of profit instead of 20 pence worth of loss. So we, from near day one, tried to make the business one that was driven by the bottom line, not one that was driven by the top line of trying to grab market share, because that's not how a successful business works. A successful business works by finding a sweet spot, a part that you can of the market that you can fulfill better than anybody else in the world. Oh. And if you try and do it all, then you know, good luck. But the theory says, the marketing theory says that's unlikely to work because it's not focused, or it's not the only way to make money. You don't have to gain every single user on the internet to be able to make money.
So the why of Majestic is very much technical in essence. And then you build all sorts of technical stuff throughout the years. Technical features have come back as well. And then you want to go broader and you want to get out of the SEO world. And then you need to like be non-technical for a bit, at least to get people to understand, I guess. And that's when you go to space? Is that when you make the decision to like?
Mel, do you want to talk about the space, how it went and where we're going with it?
Yeah, well, the Majestic in Space project started about 18 months ago. I went to...
You should tell people what we've done, actually, you know. For the few that haven't heard.
Well, okay, so Majestic in Space is a project we've been working on for 18 months, where we have a slot to print a 3D profile of Majestic data based on the what the internet would look like based on Majestic's data, based on a Majestic profile of citation flow and trust flow.
You've done that before, not in space, but from a search engine perspective, right?
Yeah, yeah. So the way that it started was about 18 months ago, I went to a 3D printer conference in Bellevue, and the keynote speech was a guy who was the founder of a company called Made in Space. And they were trying to send, in 2014, they successfully sent a 3D printer in a rocket to the International Space Station. The idea behind them doing that is that with space travel and you know, that kind of idea, not in the not too distant future, that it would cost a lot less for spare parts, tools, you know, toothbrushes or whatever. If you know you're an astronaut, oh no, I've just travelled 250 miles into the air, or you know, I've just travelled for 5 years to get to Mars and I've forgotten my toothbrush. Then you can 3D print it. So they were trying to prove this concept, built this thing, send it up there. And I remember having a conversation with Dixon about 3D printing, and that's when you had the idea to 3D print the link profiles and got this artist involved.
Yeah, so we have Brendan Dorr in a parallel universe on the other side of the planet. Parallel, same universe, but anyway, other side of the planet. We got Brendan Dorr in. He's a data artist, and again, moving towards this theme of saying, look, our data is more than SEO. Brendan, you've done some really good work for EE. He's done work for some bigger companies than I'd care to mention, and he's quite a famous guy. And our UX guy sort of saw a tweet by him saying, "I've got some time in December where, you know, if I might have some time for some spare consultancy if anyone's interested or some spare stuff." And my UX guy said, if there's one person in the world that I would respect, it would be this guy. So don't know if we can use him. So the next thing I did was I went up to Leeds, had a chat with him, with our head of development, brought him down to the team, and we had a brainstorm of how we can use the data in different ways and how we can do stuff. And one of the ideas that came out of that, wasn't the only one, was the idea of turning our two-dimensional link profile that you can see on the Majestic website. If you go and put it in any website, you'll see some dots and things for a profile. But it's really much better to be in 3D. So he wrote the program that will allow you to build, there you go, a 3D link profile. And that'll be a 3D link profile of MelCarson.com or Delightful Communications, I'm not sure which.
That's the HuffingtonPost.co.uk.
It's the Huffington Post.
With a lot of spam.
So
there's a clickbait on there as well.
so we then had a 3D idea for printing. Then back to you, Mel, and carry on with the story.
Yeah, one second, Mel. So this is not like something that a regular campaign looks like. This is not something. This is something that most people will think, like, yeah, you thought about that in the pub, because it's so out there. It's not like most CMOs just think, okay, how do we get leads from this? There's nothing lead related to this.
I think our problem is that everybody is going out there saying, digital marketing is all about content, without really understanding that if everybody's just producing a new way to how to do a bow tie or the new, you know, another 10 best SEO tools on the planet and stuff, they're not creating anything new ideas. So we had to go different. If you don't go different, you're just running with the crowd, really. And I think that's there are times to run with the crowd. Don't get me wrong. We're not writing white papers and not doing data analysis. We've got some great data. And if there's any great consultants out there that want to use our data for some great research, our doors are open because we really like our data being used, preferably third parties analyzing data. That's even better than us doing it. But yeah, this idea of a higher purpose is something that it doesn't come easy when you start with a tool that was built in a bedroom. You know, yeah. You've got to work at it.
This takes balls, right? As a business to not think about the leads and think about, okay, we're going to do this because we need to do this. As you said, you need to stand out. So not everybody dares to do it.
Yeah, I think what happened was, yeah, yes, Majestic has lead gen programs and content marketing and blogging and videos and all that kind of stuff. But this opportunity presented itself, and I was just in the mood to say, why the hell not? I immediately thought, but how's this going to translate into customers? So I went back to the guy and said, you know, how could we do this? You know, what might be the investment we would need? He came back with a number that was not, I mean, it would be less than setting up a booth at one of the conferences, one of the 25 conferences or 30 conferences. So I just thought, this is a no-brainer. We got the slot, we signed the contract, and then we thought, oh my God, you know, how do we message this? Because this is just so amazing and so out there, perfect for the SEO group, but also, you know, ended up getting picked up by, you know, mainstream news and the 3D printer and the tech press and whatever. And we haven't even started. I mean, the rocket ship's only just taken off. We're the next phase. But then the other thing was, I started thinking about, okay, well, how much leverage can we get out of this? We're going to get a whole year because the rocket took off in March. The thing's going to get printed sometime in the summer. We'll then produce a video. And then we're actually bringing it back down to Earth. So you're going to have a physical thing like this that has been manufactured in space at conferences for the following next year, that people will be able to hold, touch, have pictures taken with them, tweeting it with the, you know, and just getting that earned media. I mean, just from tracking the keywords Majestic 3D in space on Twitter, we reached 5 million Twitter accounts and had 12 million impressions, and that didn't include things like the Daily Mail and a whole bunch of other publications that we got in, that we got mentioned and links from. So I think for me, when I look back on it, you know, when I'm 70, looking back at my career, I'm just going to remember it as a time where I just thought, you know what, to hell with all the rules. This is too much of a fantastic opportunity to pass up. Let's get behind it like we've never got behind anything before in our lives, and really make a fantastic story out of it.
I think your cynicism was the suggestion there might be cynicism, Baz. I mean, our development team also, I think, at some point had a little bit of a wobble. You know, why are marketing doing this? So you know, I actually sat down with the development team and I said, look, here's the thing. This is going to space, you know. You're either going to get behind it or it's going to go to space and we're not going to get behind it, you know. But here are the things that it means for the business. You know, it's putting our product, our brand, on a worldwide stage. Literally, you know, it's you know, taking it from, you know, to outer space. So it's a great opportunity. It also has a great synergy. I mean, people don't seem to argue when a toothpaste company has an advert involving kids or animals or whatever. You know, people take on emotions and stuff to make associations. The emotion that we're taking on is inquisitiveness, I suppose, the desire for something better. And that's what space brings in abundance. It brings in, you know, the people that care about space and that look into space are either dreaming about the future, or we've got some predictive stuff for them, you know, and then or they're looking at forwarding society, humanity, and taking it to the next level. On top of that, there's an incredible synergy between, the idea of stars in space and the millions of stars in space and how they connect into solar systems, galaxies, and into groups, and that pattern, mapping that onto how websites and web pages connect into each other to create groups, I think is an interesting juxtaposition. So it's a good place for Majestic to go. It's much better than just bringing in a bunch of kids and saying, "Hey, look, isn't the internet, emotionally, good?"
And one of the other, stories to come out, the hundreds of stories that have come out with the coverage so far, was I remember when I interviewed Biz Stone from Twitter in 2009, we talked about hashtags and the fact that it was actually someone, I think, from Google invented the hashtag, and it was other people running with their product and turning it into, and innovating on top of it and running with it. One journalist ran with the Majestic in Space story and said, if you think about it, this is the first print ad in space.
That's a nice one.
So I've taken a look at that. We've taken a look at that and said, okay, that is going to be our pitch to the ad trades in order to get us in the door, because that is the sort of thing that they are going to pick up on and want to write about and think is cool versus, let's go to some of the bigger ad trades and talk about links and, synergies and trust flow and all that kind of stuff. That's not going to wash with them, but the first print ad in space, yes, thank you very much. Right. Click publish.
So you got all sorts of different angles on it, actually. So it's not just a fun campaign as in let's see what happens. It actually has different angles to it from the branding perspective mostly, but also the connection with what you actually do is there.
So, but I hope also, as we've talked about it, it sounds like it's got some focus as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's connected to what you're actually doing, and there's a thought behind it.
We have a messaging matrix which is targeting search trades, ad trades, art, because it's a piece of art trades, with all separate different pieces of messaging of why this is a great story for them. So we've gone in and as Dixon said, actually been very, very focused with it. If you look at the different places that we ended up getting coverage and branding, we've been very focused around that message to make sure that it stands out from everybody else.
So what I would like to get to the audience, I think, who's reading and seeing this, listening to it, is that the thinking behind it is very important. The essence of why you're doing it is very important, and how you think about stuff with all the different connections with it. But I think the danger would be that if they would just see Majestic is going to space and they're getting this much attention from it, they're just going to copy and paste. It's not a copy and paste kind of thing, right? Because of the stuff that you do behind the scenes. Is that correct?
Well, it's going to be really hard because the 3D printer is already taken off.
Well, I don't mean copy paste as in doing exactly the same, but it could trigger people to think like, okay, we need a campaign. What is the weirdest thing we can think about, and we just do it, because that's not how it works.
They're learning this approach. Red Bull are a really good example of somebody that does the same sort of thing, and they did their space jumping out of guy jumping out of space and parachuting to Earth. So we're not alone in taking this kind of angle, and Red Bull seems to have been a fairly successful business in there. We haven't got their kind of resources at the moment. We can't sit there and take a Formula One team and go with that. But
it's funny you mentioned actually Red Bull, because I spoke to the financial director of Red Bull, and he said, I'm happy to give marketing this amount of money because it brings back so much more than it costs me. And I think that's probably the same with you guys. But what I want to really make sure that people understand is that it's not a set thing that if you just think of a nice campaign, it will work. It needs attention. It needs thinking behind it.
It's been 18 months in the planning.
And
if anyone knows me and Dixon, at some of these conferences, We are known to have a few beers, but even after a few beers, we decided to make sure that we kept this secret for 18 months, up until the week before, because we wanted a little bit of industry groundswell, and we knew that it would be too late for any competition to try and to
it's copy. It's true. I mean, yeah, we're not generally good at keeping secrets. My job is to leak it all. So that quiet for such a long time was pretty hard. As was the Queen's Award, by the way. So but the Queen told me I wasn't allowed to say that, so I thought I better not.
So all amazing stuff. Final question on this. Can you top this? Where is it going?
I think we'll have to say you'll have to wait and see.
I'm seeing Mel think, can I say what I'm not supposed to say right now?
my mind is bursting with ideas.
I think, to be fair, we didn't, I mean, the Queen's Award, we didn't know if we were going to get, because, I mean, that was an added bonus for sure. But again, that had a history as well, a slightly different story. Way, way back when I started getting involved with Alex, he had you'll have to talk to Ashley Friedlin one day about how Alex spammed an e-consultancy's survey competition once. So Ashley Friedlin and Alex go back a long way. But anyway, long and short of it is... Alex tried to put a very early version of Majestic in for an award at e-consultancy, and needless to say, it kind of went out the other way, and you know, and went on into the distance. So anyway, when I got involved the next year, I said, look, I think we should put we should try and enter the e-consultancy awards. This was 2009, so I think the 2009 award it was, and he said, oh, yeah, I did that for now. You won't. It's a waste of time, Dixon. Absolute waste of time. I said, it's not a waste of time. I think that it's an important thing for us internally to get belief that we've got some value in the product, and for the outside world to see that there's something that's of value out there. And I said we'll do it, we'll win it, and not only will we win it, we'll carry on going until you get to see the Queen. And I said that in 2009, 2016. I'm taking him down to Buckingham Palace next month and in July, and he's going to see the Queen. So we've got long memories here at Majestic. We're not out to win in day one. There's a very good little competition by somebody else out there. That's based around the Game of Thrones thing of tools of thrones or something like that, and we're in there and stuff. And then you know the question is who's winning, and I think, well, we haven't reached Series 8 yet, so, you know, wait till the whole end of the game before you find out all the reveals.
Brilliant, we'll do that. So, just to summarise, Majestic SEO, been here for 12 years. I'm still saying Majestic SEO. Majestic.
We were going to pick you up.
Majestic, still here, 12 years in. Still growing because of the fact that you keep renewing yourself and understanding the why behind it, but also understanding how the world is changing, coming up with campaigns that actually take some time to get set up. 18 months on getting into space. July is when you're going to meet the Queen, you said?
Yes.
And when can people start seeing the sculpture that comes back from space, Mel?
We're not sure. We're told that we're in the, I think it's the 87th, 90th, it's some space terminology I don't understand. But sometime in the summer.
Sometime in the summer. All the conferences.
It'll come back down sometime in the autumn. Yeah.
Later in the year.
Okay, yeah. So by the end of the year, people can go to conferences and actually touch what you guys are printing in.
Yeah, we'll probably think about 2017, and anybody that comes to a conference on Majestic's involved in 2017, you'll have an opportunity to find something there that has been made in space. Absolutely. And we'll have the videos there to prove it.
Cool, so we're all looking forward to that. Thank you, Dixon. Thank you, Mel.
Thank you, Baz.
Educational and... thank you for taking the time to do this.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.